So we will dive into this and talk about one but many. As I told you, I think your editing is superb on this one. But I'm
Thank you.
curious, how did you even get involved with this project and with the director, Jana? Because you're also a co-producer here.
Yeah, so it was actually right at the very start of the shutdown during COVID, where, we were all taken by surprise, and I was being like, okay, how am I going to what's life going to look like right now? And a close friend of mine, who I've known for years and is also a filmmaker, reached out to me, and basically, in the mid, like 2014-ish, living in Northern California, working part-time at a wildlife center, and focusing on human wildlife conflict. So people having a raccoon messing up their lawn, or denning in their attic, or a skunk under their deck, or coyotes in their backyard, all that. Him and I had talked, and he was really aware of that. So he reached out to me at the beginning of COVID and said, "Hey, a good friend of mine is directing this documentary. She's looking for an editor, and so far she's struggling to find the right person that really like gets this." And he's like, "I thought of you right away since you've worked, you're an editor and you've also worked with human wildlife conflict, so that might be right up your alley." So that was really exciting. And then I connected with Jana and we just hit it off. I think the first phone call we were like, I think it was like 4 hours straight. We just kept like chatting about the film and about human wildlife conflict and our mutual passion for wildlife. So it just felt like this perfect fit that just fell into my lap in a way. So, yeah.
Now, at that point in time, had Jana gotten any footage, or was this just a working idea?
It was, she had the footage, so she initially designed this to be like more of a TV series about human wildlife conflict. And similarly with, one, with financing, because that requires more trips to Africa, and then two, with the pandemic, it was like, okay, well, borders are closing. She wasn't going to be able to go back and forth and continue to shoot multiple episodes, so she ended up reframing it to, okay, this is going to be a feature film. So she had about 28 hours of footage, with all the interviews, and she had already worked endlessly, just crazy, like how much she was able to accomplish with just like as we know, right? Like indie filmmaking, just the passion driving you, right? So it was like, she had gone initially, like I think on a trip for photography, because she's a like her background is in photography, and was exposed, like saw human wildlife conflict, and was like, oh my gosh, like we need to talk about this. So grassroots fundraising, was able to get back, and then was able to like beg and plead and get to speak with all these experts and bring back all this footage. So I already had like 28 hours of like just amazing footage to go through. Yeah, and it was, there's a lot of challenges too, because as she explained, like there is very guerrilla filmmaking. So in Africa, there's like time of days where just electricity is just shut down entirely. So they're in the middle of doing an interview and suddenly all the lights go out, and it's like, okay, hold on, here's a, so then it becomes like, for me as an editor, like is this gonna match? The first part of the interview that's in bright light, and then the second half that is in almost the dark. So yeah, there was a lot of interesting challenges like that to
But
work with.
it's not just the 28 hours of footage that she had, because as you're constructing this and developing your through line, you've also got to bring in archival footage, archival images, archival news. How much of a through line was developed when this came into your hands to edit?
Very little. So it was really the essence, right? The picture, that I guess the outline was, there's this conflict happening, and it is being used in a way to benefit all these different groups that are thriving from the division from people and wildlife. And what if the answer and the solution was actually in the crux of the problem, and it was people and wildlife coming together. And so that was the initial, like, this is the story that she wanted to tell, right? And then I think because it was also meant to be a film series, a TV, like a series anyway, at the beginning, there was also, like, diving deeper in all these different branches, right? So there was the core idea, and then she was like, but here is all this stuff about trophy hunting being, like, you know, under the cover, and then here's the truth about poaching, and here's the thing about that. So there was a lot of just, like, I would say, like, sphere of storylines, but not quite, like, a through. I remember at some point, because we did so many, like, initially because of the pandemic, it was, like, you know, Zoom or Skypes or on the phone discussing this. And then I was like, okay, I want you to, like, record, like, tell me the story. Tell me the, like, just tell me the story in the recording, because however that's going to fall naturally, let's start with that for our through line. Because it was a real struggle to come up with, like, what's going to be the right order. So initially I was like, I just want to hear from you. Like, tell it to me as, you know, as a story. And then that's how we started. Like, okay, here's version one. But I think there's probably been, like, 18 versions.
I was going to say, so it fell to you to come up with these, let's say, sections. Yeah. As we go through everything, and we start in Kenya, and a lot of this was just shot in Kenya, was it not?
Yes.
We start in Kenya with lions eating livestock and elephants eating crops, and then get into the idea of human-wildlife conflict. And then you very succinctly, and this, it's kudos to you on your editorial eye, Marie. You very succinctly break this down. As we go through, we meet the Sheldrick Wildlife Conservancy, who rescue baby elephants. The Liwa Conservancy, which, as I mentioned to you, I have had a connection with in the past because of its founder, Ian Craig, who I interviewed for a similar type of film many years ago, along with some poachers turned conservationist who worked with him. Then we get into the Mara Elephant Project, because one can never see enough elephants, especially baby elephants. And Mara, they basically combat poaching and trophy hunting, and they use undercover agents, many whom were former poachers. So, and you continue to take us through Old Piesta Conservancy, which is where it starts to get really interesting, because we're delving more into trophy hunting versus subsistence hunting. And the hunting community is arguing that the money they're making is for conservation and community, but as anybody with their eyes open, and if they watch this doc, will see, that's not true. Then we get into the Maasai, Tanzania, and we start seeing some possibilities for rectifying and remedying human-wild conflict. In Tanzania, they kick part of the Maasai out of their land and give 26% of the land to animals and to the trophy hunters. Contain them. Keep them limited on what they can do and cannot do. And then the nasty stuff with Safari Club International. And that's where things really, that is the real grip in this documentary, and the way you have cut it, Marie, because once we get to the safari hunting and trophy hunting and Safari Club International and their annual soirees, their conventions. You have so much archival material there. Because, number one, it's very difficult to get into Safari Club International events.
So all
you can rely on is archival. So I'm curious how challenging it was to find the archival materials. And, of course, the universally known talking point for trophy hunting, Don Jr. and Eric Trump And they're kill.
Yeah. It was, so, you know, the thing, I think as we were crafting the story, really, Jenna and I had a lot of talk about, like, how do we balance, first of all, like, you know, the highs and the lows, right? Like, so there was a lot of thought that went into it. And when it came to the archival footage, it was, I would definitely say it was extremely difficult. At the same time, it was one of those where we would be like, I'd be like, hey, like we'd have a conversation, say, okay? And we'd have a conversation and she'd be like, oh, you know, I just wish that we could show like blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, and we'd get it again, you know, all excited about the talk. And then like I'd go in and start digging and then like, you know, I don't know, maybe I was going to say like the universe, but maybe it's just, you know, now our phones listen to us. But for whatever reason, it'd be like, oh, wait a minute. So like it felt like these doors would open and be like, oh my gosh, you won't believe what I just found. And I remember when the archival footage of the convention, when we found that, and it was like, I was like, I can't believe, like, wait a minute, is this for real? Is this really like, can we actually use this? Can we license this? Can we, like, so it was, yeah, it was difficult because it was also a constant thing, right? It was like, okay, we need to figure out how to show this, but there's no money and no ways to just get back to Africa and be like, let's find the perfect, you know, angry elephant. Like, you know, how are you going to find that, right? So, so there's a ton of challenge, but I do feel like in a way it also helped guide the story. It was like, okay, we want, you know, there's certain things that we wanted to talk about, and it was like, we just can't find any footage on this stuff. So, okay, clearly not going to be part of the story. So, yeah, but it was, and I think, you know, the alignment that Jenna and I, like, both, you know, our personal, I guess, opinions, but also, like, our passion for this that aligned, we just kept, like, building, like, look what I found, ooh, like, let's see if we can find a better resolution of this, and so it was, like, a very exciting, creative, and incredibly hard at the same time, you know, and then you find something, and you're like, oh, can we use it? Oh, darn, we can't use that. So there's the legalities that come with it too. But yeah, I'm very grateful that what we were able to find. For sure.
Yeah, you have some great footage and, you know, archival stuff in here in terms of footage and photographs, such as with Donald Jr. and Eric. I'm surprised you didn't get the second picture because they've had more than one trophy hunter picture of themselves.
You know, we also had a whole ton of, like, how many, you know, the fine line of, like, okay, how much, like, we don't want to turn, it's like you want to bring the truth, right?
Right.
You don't want to fall into that, like, is it going to be perceived as, like, a political statement? So it's like, well, let's mitigate and just, you know, have enough in there that we're just showing the facts, right? That's documentary filmmaking, right? The one, like, one of the amazing footage that I think was fine, too, is the undercover, when the trophy hunters are talking about, like, how, like, they just couldn't help themselves, and they, like, just shot, like, for the fun of it, like, oh, on the way out, I just shot, like, this
people,
and that talk is just, like, we couldn't believe that we were able to get our hands on that, you know, and it's like, wow.
That one guy, that was so disturbing to hear him say that. And I said, well, I was only going to shoot one, but then there was another one, so I shot two. And
it's like, you know, as a buffet, you know, like, oh, I was going to have, like, one hors d'oeuvre, but oh my gosh, like, the dessert platter looks so good. I had one of each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you found and what you brought in here. And I have to say, a couple of the truly shocking things that you found involved Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy.
Yeah, that was something that Jana, that's a Jana credit for sure, because she was very, like, we kept making that link, right? And she was like, and then she reached out and she's like, I don't know if this is crazy. I don't know if this is too much, but this, like, what do you think of this? You know? And I was like, this is, like, I love it. Like, it's pushing it, but I love it, you know? And it's again, like, the question is always like, how do you bring this up with just, you know, these are just the facts.
Yeah.
I'm just going to compare. Like, so, yes, It was, yeah. I think overall, like, it's really nice also working with a director that's involved, right? That has opinions and a passion, and that you feed off each other so you can make the project better together. So.
And of course, one who understands the premise of human-wildlife conflict, which a lot of people don't understand or even know what that is. So it's not like she was hired just to direct this particular project, which, as you well know, so often directors come in, it's like they come in on spec, or it's like, okay, here's a script, this is what we want, and they have no connection to the subject matter whatsoever.
Right. Yeah, and, no, this is, I've been like, I mean, you know, when she initially reached out to me, we were like, oh, this is going to be like a 3-month process, you know, and the editing process was like 3.5-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been basically like, you know, living and breathing this film for 7 years. So it's just like, and I think filmmaking always takes a long time, but documentary, because you're like finding the story. And,
yeah,
you know, when it started, it was like, I just couldn't believe, even like having worked for years with human wildlife conflict, the concept of it takes one night for one elephant to come in your farm and eat 1 acre of cabbages.
Mm-hmm.
One night. Like, that just was like, whoa, like, it's like a whole other scale, right? And then the more you get involved with the project, then the more I worked on the project, the more I'm like, whoa, like, there's so many, like, whoa moments, right? Like, oh my gosh, like, I never thought of this. And I think, of course, like, we don't think of that. Like, we think of, like, why is somebody shooting an elephant? Elephants are beautiful. But then we're putting the rat poison out in our backyard, and then it's killing the hawk that's eating the, so, you know, and that the whole cascade. But
it is the circle of life, and how everything impacts everything else. It's the butterfly effect.
Yeah, exactly. And then, and that goes with human too, right? Because I did not know. That was such a, it's the other thing that's so fun about working this project, because I learned so much. But understanding conservation, how the displacement of tribes, mm-hmm. and that, how that's impacting, you know, the creation of human wildlife conflict under the name of we're conserving these animals, when actually the locals were already, they were the most conservationists, you know, they were already there coexisting just fine. So that butterfly effect, right? Of like, we're just going to move these people over here, and then good luck, you know.
And there was no need to move these people, such as the Maasai in Tanzania. Of course, that particular instance, it works really well, and it was purposeful in moving the people to create that dedicated space for, so it would stop, hopefully stop, the rest of poaching and hunting throughout the rest of Tanzania. But, you know, you give people hope here, showing people and animals thriving together, and what is being done with the predator-proof enclosures. The lion training exercises, you know, that just tickled me to no end. Lion training exercises. They're not in a zoo. They're not in a cage. But it's teaching them habit. When they try to encroach onto a farm, or, you know, or try to get in there to eat the goats, that are providing the milk and the meat for the villagers. So that, I love how you really showcase this as we get into the third act of the film. You really do a beautiful job celebrating the wildlife photo tourism and the community conservation and safari camps and the ranching that come together. Of course, this is the uplift after we hear the horrible statistics about cheetahs, and there are less than 7,000 left in the wild. This is another reason, and I think the cheetah is a perfect example because of the notoriety that the Cincinnati Zoo has for their work with cheetah conservation and their wonderful pairings and using social media to engage with the world as we follow these cheetahs as they're born and get trained and live there, and how they have, like Chris, one of the most famous cheetahs at the Cincinnati Zoo right now. Poor Chris, I told you that Chris was running and stretched a hamstring, and they didn't think that Chris would even be able to walk again. But with therapists working with her, she is now walking, and she wants to run, but they're not letting her run because cheetahs can go up to 60, 70 miles an hour.
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting with the cheetahs, too, is I didn't realize that whole point. Another thing I learned, right, was the, you know, we do put, like, oh, cheetah leopards, like, you know, some people can't, like, you know, like, what's the difference? I didn't realize that lions preyed on cheetahs so that in conservation, as we're developing environments that are, like, optimal for lions, then the cheetahs are just being pushed out even more because they're not going to go in prime lion area.
Yeah.
So then that makes them even more prone to interacting with villagers and then having conflicts there. I thought that was also really interesting.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of these programs that zoos have, people can say all they want about, you know, be negative about zoos. I personally love them when they're done right. And one of the big things that a lot of zoos are doing is they are having breeding programs. And in many cases, it's with the hope of returning some of the wildlife into the wild. And to preserve the species. Because as you show us, very sadly, you show us the northern white rhino and the last male that died. And thanks to Old Pajada Conservancy, now they're trying that surrogacy with northern white rhino sperm that was taken from him before he passed, and trying to meld that with southern white rhinos, but we'll never have another purebred northern white rhino ever again. We are watching the extinction of so many of these animals.
And that's, you know, the guardian that we interview, who, like, you know, that was his job, was to protect Sudan, right? The last male. And that relationship that's built, and, you know, when he talks about, like, wow, like, you're watching the extinction of a species. Like, all you can do is protect him as long as you can. And then that's it. And how that, like, also, like, you know, how that propelled him to be, like, create this, like, community, like, the tourism, but really where the money goes back to the community, and that there's so many, like, it just impacts so many lives, you know. I found that really inspiring. I'm so grateful, like, to, because we had, like, you know, there's an initial group of experts, and then as, like, you know, this project moved past the pandemic, Jana was able to raise more money and go back, and then, you know, some of the interviews were like, the parts that were in the dark were like, okay, you know what, let's ask those questions again. And then, like, which actually led to, like, deeper discussions. So then she'd come back with, like, there's another 36 hours of footage, or there's another. But then we got, like, Eduardo with the trophy hunting, like, you know, like, the campaign to ban trophy hunting in the UK, and his involvement. So there's been, and then that's later on is the guardian for the white rhino, joined us in the interviews as well as an expert. And that just, all these gifts, you know, and the more you craft, like, the more the story unfolds, I should say, the more opportunity there's, like, oh my gosh, like, look who we got to interview now, you know?
Yes, and the but more, yeah, and the more footage you then have to recut and rework, because now the story is changing completely.
Jana was like, I interviewed Eduardo, and it's really long, and I'm really sorry, but I had to do it. So I'm like, okay, it's okay. So it's, but it's all, like, it, you know, and then the question also, as an editor, you had, okay, well, because it's a learning journey, right? Now, for years, I've been learning about the African version of human-wildlife conflict. So that first statement of, like, the elephant eating the cabbages that made me go, whoa, at first, now I'm, like, past that, right? But it's like, well, let's remember our audience. They haven't spent 4 years dealing with it. So let's make sure, you know, like, as we keep going down the rabbit hole of there's more and more and more and more and more, we need to, like, make sure that we're, like, keeping it, you know, we're hitting that initial whoa moment for our audience too. So it's, like, not getting too convoluted. Even, like, there was a lot to go through, for sure. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of,
Well, and just so people don't get upset, I have to say you did include the story of Cecil the Lion, because Cecil, that story took the world. That was a global event with Cecil the Lion. And I like the fact that you have touchstones like that. Some touchstones you might not even realize are touchstones, like the cheetahs. But to have the story of Cecil in there, everybody knows about Cecil. People that are going to want to see this documentary, One But Many, these are the people that are going to recognize some of these touchstones that you have. And the fact that you have, they are actually placed very wonderfully, peppered throughout the doc. And I think some of it you don't even realize you did, but you did. And this begs a question. How challenging was it for you to establish a consistent visual and emotional tonal bandwidth throughout this film?
That those peaks and valleys, that was, I mean, we watched the film so many. It's like when, obviously, like this was our lives and Jenna even more. But it'd be like, remember when I knew what clip, like one word, one intonation, right? Because like we watched it so many times. But it was like watching it over and over and over and being like, emotionally, like how do you craft this and how do you exactly pepper in these moments and build these anchors and then just like whoop, like come out before you're emotionally exhausted, right? Because that's not the point. Really, the point is we have to talk about the whys, right? But the point is that hope that you mentioned. It's that, we're overwhelmed and we're bombarded with the heartbreaks, I guess, and the negativity in the news and life, right? But the solution is so simple. It's just talk to one another, right? Or interact and coexist and support one another, whether that's two humans or a human and an animal, right? It's like the answer, anything in life, the answer is always about connection and coming together. So that's the it is like the challenge of like crafting, like making sure that that hope is the through line, and that joy in those moments and that beauty. And then like it might be hard to hear something about the trophy hunting, but then like enjoying like the Lion Cubs playing and like how like I love the little cub that's bouncing around, like just bouncing on his mom. And it's just so like it in a way like it humanizes it, right? Like so it was definitely like weaving in like, okay, how do we like continue to like I guess like pamper our hearts throughout, like so like that hope is alive throughout the film. That was I think one of the biggest challenge for sure.
Well, and I think because so much of this is voiceover also, with Jana doing narration and voiceover, you've got to make sure with your visuals that what she is saying is not contradicting. Because to show cute, adorable little lion cubs playing, you don't want to have a voiceover that's talking about slaughtering them. Because that you're
You're right.
pushing the envelope and crossing a line, and you also risk losing your audience at that point. It's like, how insensitive are you? Let us enjoy the cute little lion cubs for a moment. And then get into the other. And then you had to mix in animation.
And we had the animation. Gosh, that was a journey too. Jana had a very specific vision, and I love that it was, sort of a African style, keeping it very simple. And that's, I think that, archival footage are really great, but there is really like points that can be made so much, it's clearer in a way with the animation. So there was a team that was originally, I can't say that word, originally working with us. And then, like any indie film, there's like, oops, okay, like something, like, you know, some issues happen. So there was, I believe, two or three the different animators that came on board to get the final product. And but that, yeah, the animation was great. And that was, like, that was the easy part of the edit. And that was really, like, Jana's vision of, like, you know, we discussed, like, like, how, and remember the Predator Proof was one of them. I'm like, can we get, like, we were trying to find archival footage, something that would really show. And it's like, you know, you kind of, yeah, you don't quite get the, so that was one where, you know, we talked about it, and she went back to the animators and were like, we want something for this section. And they did that animation. And I think that really supports that point really well.
I love the animation. I love the color scheme of it. Because that's something else you've got to think about while you're editing. You've got to think about the color of the film, the color balance. So you need a cohesiveness with that. But I love the animation that it's done in the brick tone, copper red, and the sandy yellow. So it looks like life on the Serengeti. It looks like Africa. So I love the animation, and I like your placement of it within the context of the documentary. And it's a nice visual break.
And I think it's support to, like, the, you know, the whole section where we talk about, you know, what happened with, like, you know, Botswana, and then the new president coming in, and then, like, selling the permit to the trophy hunters, and how much money that means for the government. Like, that was always an area, which actually was the one of the reason that Jana was like, I have to do this documentary, because Botswana was such a haven in a protected area for elephants, and then, whoa, what happened? Like, there's, like, suddenly now there's human wildlife conflict, and they want to shoot all the elephants, and then, like, she started seeing the ties to the U.S., and she was like, oh my gosh, like, I have to tell this story. So that was, there's so much going on with, like kind of brainy facts with Botswana, and we kept being like, okay, like, how much archival for this, how much voiceover to cover it, and then the animation felt like a easy way to see, like, a U.S. tank pulling through and just, like, starting shooting and showing, like visually, I think that was, so some animation, basically, my point is it was, like, design, like she had an idea from the get-go, and some was really, like, as we would hit these sections in the film, like, how do we, there has to be a better way to convey this message and like, share those facts. So those were created sort of after the fact to be supportive. But, yeah, I think the color scheme, I agree with you in that, keeping you in that, because that was a whole other, I also worked on the colors for the film, and that was a whole other challenge, but for sure.
Well, you know, something that comes through loud and clear is that if you follow the money, you find out why trophy hunting continues. You see the politics that are involved. Botswana is a perfect example. You see how politics have allowed animal trophies to be imported, particularly into the United States. And we're talking animals, not just like elephant tusks or rhino horns for the ivory. We're talking whole animals as animal trophies. And then social media, thanks to people like Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, they allow advertisements that essentially are trafficking the sale of exotic animals.
And people, there's so many layers, right? Because someone's going to look at a picture of a cheetah on Instagram and go, oh my God, it's so cute, and play the video a bunch of time of the cheetah playing with a ball. And it feels so harmless, right? But we all know that the more views, the more money, the more this, the more that, and then where does the money go? And then it's like, oh, wow, I make money when I have a cheetah to play with a ball. I'll get a cheetah too. Oh, where do I get a cheetah? Oh, this villager, like, they just lost their goat. So they'll sell me some cheetah cubs. You're like, it's just like, then you're, and it's all a domino effect that it's so easy to be a part of without, like, realizing it, right? And so it's so important to be aware of what your actions mean, you know, and where does that come from? You know, how did a baby cheetah that cub cheated playing with a ball. Where did that come from? What's his story, huh? Like, he wasn't just born a pet shop. You know, like, it's like not, yeah. So it makes you think, but yeah, it's, and I thought there was a really interesting, we just, there's a clip with Donald Trump, and that was something that was really important for us to show, because the fact that he, you know, politics aside, like, he says at that time he's president, and he says he didn't want elephants to be brought into this country.
Mm-hmm.
He did a ban. But despite him as a president saying that, you've got, you know, the people that have been appointed in the administration, his son, and then all the money with Safari International, everything basically going around and being like, nope, we're going to fight this in local, like, in state courts, and, mm-hmm. and like, reverse all these bans. And so I think that's an interesting point, because it also sort of brings back to, like, you got the person watching the cheetah with the ball on social media, but it brings, like, we often be like, well, can't government do something? Or can't, you know, like, well, the president put a ban, but it doesn't really mean anything, because that web is weaved a lot deeper than just mm-hmm. one person. So I think it's an interesting, because again, like, of course, like, it's touchy, you know, politically right now, right? But you also, I think the point of that section is also to show, like, someone who's a president that you would think, if he says there's a ban, actually his words were completely, like, stepped all over. So just seeing how deep the web is, and how every little detail, so that, you know, you as a citizen watching that video can have more of an impact, you know, you doing something that is leading to the demand of more trophy hunting happening, or more, like, wildlife trafficking happening, you know, you have a direct impact just as much, you know. So
mm-hmm.
that was an interesting point.
Now, I'm curious yeah. for you, because sometimes this doesn't affect an editor. I've had some tell me it does not, which I find difficult to believe. You've got score. You have score. You have Cody Westheimer's score.
Mm-hmm.
Were you editing for your pacing purposes with the score in mind? Did score come in after? Did you totally ignore score? What was your relationship in editing One But Many in terms of the story, the visuals, and the score?
That is a great question. I'm actually, music plays a huge part of my work as an editor in anything I do. And I don't know if it's because my background, I have music, and I grew up and went to conservatory. And so that's always been a big part of my life. But when I film, if I don't have, you know, like, most of the time you don't have the actual composer's music, right? But I'll pull music for inspiration and cut to it. I think it's, I mean, it changes everything. It changes the tone of your film. Like, it's so important that I couldn't personally really, like, imagine editing without it. So I think we'd pull, like as I was cutting, I'd pull music. There was some that, you know, I believe, I'm not quite sure if it was right at the beginning or shortly after, but I, like, there's a, Jenna knew, like, who she wanted to use for the music. So there was some, like, style, some previous music that, you know, that composer had written that we can refer to. So kind of get the feel, right? Like, mm-hmm. okay, this is sort of the, so again, it was a collaboration, like, pulling vibes, but be like, ooh, like, this song, this, what do you think of this? But I think it absolutely helped craft those moments, right? And as we're, like, that peppering that you mentioned, mm-hmm. right? And, like, when do we, like, lift up? That has to work with the music, too. Like, that music, like, moves your emotions and really, like, helps you, you know, get pulled out of those darker moment, right? And lifts you up. So it's not just the images, but it's the music plays a big part. So yes, it was, it took a while to, like, you know, and that might be, again, a year, maybe, or a year and a half.
Wow. Yeah.
But until we started having, like, the actual, like, okay, this is going to be a piece. But there was, I feel like there was music all along, like from the right away. I think that's really important. It's a great question.
A documentary really does need music.
Yeah.
Except in very, very limited situations. But you really need something, an undercurrent there.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it has to tie it all together,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And more so in a documentary than in a narrative feature.
Yes.
Because in a narrative feature, you also have the cacophony of, say it's an MCU film. You got a cacophony of explosions and action and screaming and yelling among 10 Avengers. And
right.
But in something like a documentary, unless it's a documentary on war or human conflict with arms, you really do need music. And of course, music is the common denominator around the world.
Mm-hmm.
That is the universal connective tissue.
Right.
And in a film like this, you know, music soothes the savage breast or beast, depending on how people want to say it. It's actually very important for a doc like this.
Yeah, and I think it was also like, you know, letting it breathe. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you know, the first few versions were like, okay, we put all the interviews are in, like, this is everything we want to say. Now, like, okay, hold on, like, let us, like, just watch. And there's, like, a meditative aspect, right, of the just music with images, mm-hmm. right? I love, that was one of the trips when Jana went back and she, like, I shot more stuff. I'm like, okay. But the footage of the elephants in the rain, like, it's just, it's so poetic.
Yeah.
And there's so much, like it's such a gift. Like, there's this beautiful, like, moving image and the music with it, and then there's the sadness. That is, to me, like, the image that's worth, you know, talks a thousand words, whatever. It's, like, just, so finding, you know, using the music and finding these places to really, like, just sit and take it all in and take them, you know, the majestic.
Absolutely. Life. You want everyone to feel that, because that is the heart of everything, is connecting mm-hmm. with these majestic creatures, all of them.
Yeah.
From little ones to big ones, from the goats that are running the risk of having a lion eat them mm-hmm. to, you know, an elephant eating a full acre of cabbages in one night. You need to see the beauty to appreciate and understand what's happening. And the music helps you do that. And I think your marriage of the music with the visuals is just extremely well done, Marie. Just really well done.
Thank you.
The one problem I have with this documentary, though, there is so much here that I would have liked to have seen this broken out into a series, mm-hmm. even a limited series, and devote more time to each of these issues. This is an amazing oversight, an oversight of the situation. Not oversight mm-hmm. by ignoring it, but no, an oversight, looking at the whole...
overview of...
Yeah, that's the word, overview. Yeah. Just so much happening here. Now... Mm-hmm. I have to wonder, because it was announced that Byron Allen's Freestyle Media acquired the doc for distribution.
Yeah.
Now, is there any chance, because I understand that Jana negotiated this herself, so is there any chance that with Freestyle now having this, that they could expand from this and turn this into, because you've got, with all the hours of footage you got,
mm-hmm.
there's got to be more there that each subject here could be turned into its own hour-long piece.
Right. Yeah, almost like going back to, like, her original series ideas. I'm not sure what their, like, the discussion that they've had has been, but I think, I mean, I agree, there's just so much, right? And another aspect is how starting all this, like, something that was really close to Jana was part, and I was got really excited about too, with my previous experience, was to actually put the documentary out there and then help fund a foundation that is dedicated to boots on the ground human wildlife. How can we support and not not let's come in and we'll do the job for you, but how can we support this community? Okay, there needs to be 10 kilometers of fencing. Let's do fundraising for it. And so through raising awareness with the film. So obviously with something that would be a series, that opportunity can grow as well, right? The more awareness, but I think anything is possible. I think it's right now, we're excited to be able to start the conversation with the film premiering at Dances with Films. I'm like, okay, we're starting the conversation, and share it with as many people as possible. And then with the distribution deal, it's really exciting to see how much further it can go.
And of course, the world premiere is next Sunday on the 29th.
It is.
The world
Come
premiere.
and watch it.
And there are still tickets available.
Yes. Get yours before it sells out. Yes.
Yeah,
Sell
because
tickets available. Dances with Film.
the deeper you get into Dances with Films Festival as the week goes on, tickets become scarcer and scarcer because word of mouth carries
Right.
so much and people, it's like, hey, it's in Hollywood. Hey, it's the Chinese. And
Yeah.
it's a perfect showcase, but this is just so exciting. And to go into your
Yeah.
world premiere having this distribution deal in place makes it even more exciting. So people
Yeah.
can really get in on the ground floor and see this before anybody else can.
Exactly. Yeah, I was super grateful, super excited. It's a really awesome opportunity. Yeah.
Well, you
It's so
should.
much work went into it, so it's great to see it there.
I want, when were you finally finished with the final edit?
Oh my gosh, yesterday? No. The oh. I think less than a year ago.
I was
For sure,
thinking
less
3 weeks
than a
ago,
year
but that's.
I mean, so that's the thing. It's 3 weeks ago was oh, hold on, here's a tweak in audio, and then we'll swap that. So little things like that, but the edit, probably a year. But it's really hard because again, it's just ever we're constantly learning and discovering new things. It's oh my gosh, it has to be about this. It has to be we have to add this. So it's hard to be nope. And it's always hard to be when do you the film is done, let it go, right? I think it's always difficult with any film, but a documentary that has a topic that is constantly
Yeah, it's evergreen.
evolving.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's even more challenging to be okay, this is a statement. We're gonna okay, let it go, let it go. Yeah, which would be part of why having the opportunity to make it a series and diving deeper even into all of those
I'm
would be great.
curious because quite often, once a distributor picks up a film out of a festival, they may want it retweaked for them. Would you be the person who would be doing that retweaking, or would they bring in a different editor to do it?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. I feel like I don't know.
Well,
I
I
feel I
think
don't know if they have
you
I
need to
don't
find out the answer to that question, woman.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Good point.
you need to find out the answer to that question. Because I've seen it go both ways.
Yeah, right?
I haven't seen anything that's been at a festival level and picked up by Freestyle, but I have seen other stuff with other smaller distributors. And then they want the ending changed. It's like they cut this, they want everything off the cutting room floor so they can redo scenes. And sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. Sometimes they let the director and editor do it. Sometimes they bring in their own people to do it. So that is a question you need to get an answer
Yeah, that's
to.
okay. I can say that Jenna is a warrior for this film. And I could definitely, I can't picture her sort of letting the film, be
torn apart
in any way that she wouldn't be like this. Yeah, because it's such a, so, it's been her life day in and day out for so many years. And she's lived it. She's lived and she's been with that, those communities in Africa and been on site and firsthand. So it's, I couldn't imagine her not being involved in the decision, and I would definitely trust where she takes it because I think she has really strong instinct.
Well, job so well done.
Thank you.
I really like, as you know, I genuinely do like this documentary very much. I want to see more like this. I want to see more on these topics because it's so important. In the grand scheme of things, it's so important. And this is a really good primer for everybody as to the issues of what human-wildlife conflict is and some specific areas and situations that really shine a light on it. So I'm so glad that you got involved with this and did it.
Thank you. Me too. And it also, the when you go see the film, I think that, it covers Africa, right? But human-wildlife conflict is right here at home, right? So that message of the solution is, showing that connection with the community conservation and people connecting with the animals and solving all these issues. I think it's important to remember after the film, too, hey, this is what you can do in your own backyard, right? Getting that and educating yourself more about, what we hear, what we're told, coyotes are evil, we got to shoot them all. And then the reality, a real quick anecdote on that. It was when I was working at a wildlife center, I didn't realize that, a pack of coyotes, only the alphas will reproduce and the entire rest of the pack don't reproduce unless the alphas are killed. And then you got a pack of 12 that's all going into reproduction mode to try to make a new alpha. So the more coyotes are getting killed, which are usually the alphas, the more you're breeding coyotes. So that was one thing where the big news from the hunters community, the hunter community is they're dangerous. They're going to eat your pets. We're going to have a coyote killing contest. What you don't realize is that that's going to bring more coyotes in your backyard. So, learning about what is the wildlife situation in your area and how can you make a difference in connecting and, something that's little tiny, simple switch in behavior, and that can make a whole difference and make it easier for the animals, but also for yourself. So that's also
absolutely
the message we hope people take home.
And they get to see these majestic creatures, and in the case of many of them, who knows how many more years without something being done, without resolving this conflict, how much longer we will be able to see them on our planet.
Exactly. Exactly.
The fact that in our lifetime, the northern white rhino and many other species, but the northern white rhino is now gone, and we watched it happen. We watched it happen.
Yeah.
So.
We did it.
Man screws up so many things, let me tell you.
Right?
Well, that's why it's a good thing that a woman was editing this film.
That a woman directed wrote it.
Yes, so there you go. All right, my friend. I thank you so, so, so much. This has been so wonderful. Are you going to be...
thank you so much for your time.
Are you going to be there Sunday night?
Of course.
What time is this screening on Sunday?
It is at 2:30.
Oh, in the afternoon, daytime.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. Maybe I might even pop over. I might.
Yeah.
I might.
That'd be great. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that you reach out. I'm so glad. Thank you for watching it. Thank you for all your thoughts. And it's just, it's so great discussing this with you. Awesome.
It has been an absolute joy. And I will see you for sure on Friday. And hopefully next Sunday, too.
That sounds good. Okay.
Go have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.